Good morning. Good morning, brave souls coming 8:15 in the morning on a beautiful day. So it's funny, the first session of the of every conference, people have high anticipations, they're fresh. So we'll try to put together today a presentation for one of the most exciting features of the next version of SQL Server. Denali is the code name of the next version of SQL Server, and the feature name is Always On. So today I have a presentation, which so far I haven't finished in any of my presentations, because in the middle of the presentation there is a very nice, demo, where we go through live and we do all this crazy stuff with Always On, establishing clusters, breaking them, putting them together again. And by the time we finish the demo, we say, well, we haven't finished the presentation, but that's okay. It's nicer to see live the thing working. My name is Nicolas Dritsas. I'm a principal program manager with the SQL Server team. I've been in Asia now for 6 years, supporting the most craziest SQL projects in the world, I guess. They just, if there is something crazy, they call us, you know, you guys take care of that. The past year, I've been switching more and more on SQL Azure, trying to bring the scale up to the cloud and working over there. Of course, you may say 50 gigabyte database, what kind of scale are you talking about? But if you have 1,000 databases working together and each one is 50 gigabytes, then it's more exciting. So something we're working on that as well. Has anybody of you worked with Azure or playing with Azure at all? Some of you? Okay, next year I want to see more hands. Otherwise, I won't have a job. All right, cool. So how about Denali? Has any of you played at all with Denali in any fashion? Some of you? Don't be shy. Okay. Denali is in the CTP 3 version now, or beta 3, you may say. We just released it a few days ago. It's available in MSDN, so it's a public beta. I encourage you as database professionals to download it, start using it, start looking into that. It's a major release, so we have a lot of new features, a lot of excitement about it. We have a lot of material out there, webcasts, podcasts, iPodcasts, whatever we have. It's a lot of information out there, so try to find an area to focus on around that. All right, so Always On is our new name for high availability and disaster recovery solutions. Today, SQL has not a shortage of suggestions or tools to establish a high availability or disaster recovery environment. We have replication and a few flavors of those. You have log shipping, you have clustering, you have mirroring, and a few flavors of those too. So it's a good number of options, and sometimes it's not easy to stitch them together. How many of you have experiences with mirroring? Oh, okay, a good number of you. How about replication? Okay, many more of you. Is it replication fun, especially when it's not working? So backup restore, baby. FedEx is our friend over here, you know, get the USB drive, send it over, start again. So in Denali, we took a stack and we're saying, okay, we believe mirroring is one of the technologies we want to focus more and kind of drive it forward much further and give that coherence, give that better experience on establishing a high availability system. We do have today some very large enterprises. They're using 2008 and 2008 R2 features. Some of the names are there, Dell, HP, Bwin. Bwin is that big betting organization out of Austria. If you follow soccer, you know, Real Madrid has that over here. Yeah. Again, the solutions are fragmented, and we're missing some flexibility points, you know, how to increase perhaps a utilization of your extra hardware. When you're establishing a high availability disaster recovery system, what is one of your main desires? you have a big system, potentially a replica of your primary system, that sits most of the times idle over there, just in case you ever need it. And I'm sure your managers or your company say, well, why don't we use this big server sitting there? So we'll find some ways, or we'll discuss some ways we allow you to use them potentially. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. So we wanted to establish some main themes. The way SQL Server, actually overall Microsoft development methodology works is we're establishing some main themes, and Always On was one of our main themes. Some other themes was improve developer productivity, improve IT productivity, improve BI, and Always On was one of the main themes. Then we go down to particular deliverables of that theme. And there were three main deliverables. We wanted them to be integrated, flexible, and efficient. So integrated, the idea was, the key term over here is to be unified. And unified in Microsoft lingo means a nice wizard that you go through step by step, and at the end does what you're supposed to do. Of course, these wizard results can be scripted, can be available to you, and we fully support, as you'll see, PowerShell commands that you can. It allows you to script and replay and establish all this complex cluster very easily through a single script. The next theme was around flexibility. We wanted to find ways to reuse your existing investment. We understand that the investment is high, so we need to see how you can allow you to enhance that. For example, today in mirroring, you cannot read the mirror. The mirror sitting there cannot be read. Am I right? We cannot read the mirror? Now let me use my good ear. I'm sorry, my right ear was clogged last night in the landing. Somebody said it? I'm sorry? You cannot access your mirror. Do I hear another way? Snapshots. So yes and no. Yes, you cannot access real time your mirror, but we have database snapshots which kind of allows you to access that. Is database snapshot creating a problem to your primary? Sometimes? It could, especially when you have a lot of batch jobs in the primary, because snapshot is trying always, it starts in a way with an empty container, and as you're reading data, it's going to fetch the original pages before they get updated. So snapshot is an option, but it's not the perfect way to do that. So we'll talk how we can improve that. We want it to be efficient, cost effective. One of the big things we had as far as the clustering, for example, is you had to use servers that were part of the hardware compatibility list. That's dreadful HCL stuff. So that implies expensive hardware, tightly coupled hardware, which maybe not too efficient sometimes. Another question is, of course, that's a religious war, SAN versus DAS. You know, today clustering requires SAN, but we wanted to see how we can allow direct attached storage as well to come in a high availability scenario by allow you to have share nothing nodes in the cluster. And that's very exciting. So we'll see when we go through the demo how we establish that. So we have the new always-on solutions. So as far as the tool, first of all, to go back to the productivity, we wanted to make sure everything is running and you can do all the stuff using SSMS. So that is the case. SSMS is the only tool you need to use to manage always on. There is a new node under management. You'll see that when I show you. It's called availability groups. And that's where you establish your availability group and your listener. So availability group is a new concept. Today in mirroring, we mirror what? One database. How about if application requires three databases? Or four. So one that you mirror fails over, the other three stay behind, that's a little problem there. Okay. So the availability group is a new container that simply you say these three databases will be mirrored. So they move as a unit back and forth. Okay? Simple as that. The second exciting part, multiple secondaries. So today we have only one secondary. With Denali, we support up to four secondaries. It's a hub and spoke story. You have your primary, and you have, from the primary, we can propagate up to four. So that's the first exciting part. You may say, why four? Well, we had to stop somewhere. Can be six. by the way, you cannot go six. You can go up to four. The third part is also very exciting. Active secondaries. Wow. So all of a sudden, the secondary is not idle sitting there. Active secondaries allow you to do two exciting stuff. Read from the secondary real time with no need of snapshot, and backup from the secondary. So that case becomes an active secondary, and when it becomes active, in case you ask me, you have to pay license for that. I was told. So this is the two main things I would say, multiple secondaries and active secondaries. Yes, sir?
Does the availability of leverage support cross-database transactions?
So the question is if the availability group supports transactions across databases. You mean outside of the availability group?
No,
in the availability group. No, yes, I mean, we do, but it's not part of the availability group. So it's part of the DTC, it's fine. So don't assume we imply every database that goes there, everything is transacted across databases. You have to do that. Yeah? Okay. As far as the cluster is concerned, the traditional cluster, we allow multi-site clustering. That's very, very important. We got a lot of requests on that. That implies we don't require we don't have subnet restrictions anymore. Every server, every node can be on its own network. No problem. So you can have one in Sydney, one in Perth, one in Canberra, one in Brisbane. One, two, three, four. There they are. Okay? And each one of them is very exciting. Can be totally top to bottom, share nothing. You can have four servers, four DASes, all participating in the same Windows cluster. The big change we made also over here is we have separated 100% Windows cluster from SQL cluster. As far as SQL is concerned, SQL doesn't know anything of the cluster. Windows 100% establishes and manages the cluster. Okay? If you establish today clustering in SQL, you have to do something in Windows, something in SQL. Remember those? Resource names, IPs, all these things. It was kind of convoluted. Today, Windows establishes the cluster and manages the cluster. SQL participates in the cluster. And how do they participate? Via the availability groups. You'll see when we do the demo, when you establish the availability group, SQL will ask you which cluster you want me to participate in. So the cluster must be established already to do that. So no subnet restrictions, no SAN requirements. It can be actually fully separated. And what else? Improved diagnostics. That's what I like as well as far as the clustering. One of the challenges today of clustering is sometimes we fail over and we have no idea why we did. Have you faced that problem? You know, the system all of a sudden failing over. Like, no, stop, don't fail over. And you don't know why. So today in 2008 R2, we have a restricted number of scenarios or a limited number of scenarios that trigger a failover. It's not very granular, not very detailed. In Denali, we're adding, I think, like two, three pages of different events that they're more granular, they give you more flexibility to establish and control when the failover is to occur. Next versions of SQL will allow you to create your own events as well, but we don't have that today. We're just giving you many more events to choose from. All right, so I think I talked for a lot of this stuff already. Is that working? Oh, cool. All right, so we have up to four secondaries. Two of them can be synchronous. And among those two synchronous, you can establish a pair that is automatic failover. I do not require a witness server anymore, like I do today in mirroring. So you can have simply four servers. Two of them can be synchronous, while the other two can be asynchronous. And among those two synchronous, you can establish a pair that can be automatic failover. We support compression, we support encryption, and of course the automatic failover is established from here, but you have also manual failover process. You can right click and say failover the node, and the nodes will change role. As we're implying here, there is only one primary in the cluster. If you have four servers in the cluster, only one can be primary at any given time. So the other three will be potentially read-only, or they can be standby. Read-only is something you have to explicitly say this server is read-only. Now, so if it's read-only, you're going to have potentially a lot of customers or a lot of your connections that require read-only going to that server. So what potential issue may occur if you have a lot of queries keep reading the system? Will you have any potential issues with performance, with data loads, things like that? Take long? Who said that? Blocking. So since everybody's reading is a read-only database, you cannot do update or insert or whatever, but there is one writer. Which writer? The log writer, you know, from the mirroring. So since we have only one writer and many readers, what feature do you think we enable to avoid the problem? Database snapshot isolation. So database snapshot isolation is on by default over here. So readers do not block writers, ever. So the system supposedly flows, actually does. We don't have any blocking. You can keep reading and the system stays in sync. The other exciting part is here, which I'm going to demo, application failover using virtual name. So that was a whole development. It's all in the background. It doesn't, you don't know exactly what we did, or I don't know what we did. It's a code name Medusa. It's like the big head with the snakes and all that. So the idea is your application connects to a virtual name for the cluster, and then it knows by querying the cluster which server is the primary, which server is the read-only, and it takes you to the right place. The point over there is if there is a failure, fail bug, fail over, you know, some of the servers fail, you do zero changes in your application. If you connect, if your connection string uses that virtual name, the underlying technology will take care to route you to the right place. And we'll see how that works. Sorry. We have a nice dashboard. I'll show it to you. It shows the health of the cluster. System center integration. System center is something probably you'll see we're using more and more and more. We're releasing packs. I don't know if you've seen from Microsoft. We have packs for SQL, SQL Server, for SQL Azure. There are all these health packs for System Center 2007 that's what we're shipping to allow you to monitor systems better and better. So if you haven't played with System Center, start looking into that more seriously and educate yourselves. We support file stream as well. So if you have file stream, big files, what have you, file stream is supported in Always On as well. So you can have a large number of documents replicating across a cluster. As far as efficiency, we said active secondary, readable, backup. Okay. So the idea of the backup is very exciting as well, because if you have a synchronous pair, you can even restore from the secondary backup on the primary, because the LCNs are fully in sync between of those. So you can take a backup that you did in the secondary, restore it on the primary, apply the logs, you're back in business. So that increased the high availability of your system. So here are some scenarios that we see. This is something I really like myself. This is where you have a direct attached storage, regional and geo target. So there you have two servers, they are fully in sync. This is in sync as well, and maybe your readable server. And here you have async, which is your disaster recovery story. This is more a shared storage scenario, still geo spreading out, and we have asynchronous, But here we're putting also a traditional cluster share storage to increase even more the availability of the system. So the nodes, those four servers I told you, they can be standalone share nothing servers, or they can be traditional share storage cluster systems. We have no limitations on hardware, and all those nodes, of course, can be different types of servers. They don't have to be identical servers to be part of the cluster. Okay? And by the way, if you're done clustering in R2, when you try to establish the cluster, all these checks, if actually the cluster will end up in a healthy condition, will be performed. You won't finish the clustering unless everything is checked and balanced through the system. So this is some mission critical requirements possibility. Let's say they give you some requirements, zero data loss. And of course, this is a lot of discussion can be done about that. What is zero data loss? There's nothing like zero data loss, guys. I mean, you lose data. Even in synchronous, you lose data. Which data, though? If you have a synchronous mirroring, what data may be lost? I'm sorry? Uncommitted data, exactly. Data on the fly, this is something that the application can control. Now, given you this listener I told you before, this virtual name, your application, that's where you're enhancing it, you can get a message that there is a failover in progress, and then you can retry to commit your application. Okay? So the OLEDB provider understands the concept of clustering and the status of the cluster. So to establish the high availability we have today, as we said, we can have an automatic failover database mirroring here, full sync. And then we can also establish log shipping. Don't forget the nice log shipping that allows you to create a DR situation as well. So let's go through a demo to see the first part, how to set up a cluster with availability groups. And my second demo will be how we use the virtual name to create, to allow application to connect to the cluster more transparently. All right. So we're holding our breath now. So let me tell you what's going on over here. I'm connecting to a server in Redmond via your lovely internet connection here. So things may happen. This is a build. Actually, it's a post-HTTP3 build. Let me go to... Oh, you're changing it? Okay, there you are. So this is my main server. It's a DL580 G7 running out of Redmond, my Redmond lab. I changed it back. I'll let you change it. Excellent. So I'm running Hyper-V over here. I have, then my environment is, I have four VMs, server 2 to server 4. These are my four nodes I'm going to put in a cluster. And the other one, server 1, is just my AD directory. Another point here I want to make is you can do all this technology always on VMs as well. VMs can be clustered, can be highly available, and then you can move the VMs from one physical server to the other if you like to. My physical server there is pretty neat. So being hardware guys, like you guys like hardware? Big iron? I have to show you that. So I asked them for a server. It says, okay, here's a 64-core server. Yeah, it's 16 by 4. I did count them this morning. But the most exciting part is this one. You see this memory? How big is that? 1 terabyte. So what do you do with this beast? You virtualize it. Trust me, you don't know, no single process needs that much. You see how much we're performing? Zero. Nice. And I'm running five VMs, you know, and they're all running Denali and they're all running databases. Granted, there's no activity. Even the memory, you know, this is pathetic. What am I using there? Like 60 gigs of memory. So I can, this is a standard DL580. I'm getting goosebumps now. Because I've been 15 years in Microsoft and overall 30 years in the industry, and we started, you know, with one CPU, two CPUs, you know. Hey, we broke 640K and stuff like that. Now you have 1 terabyte of RAM. And, so I beg you, if you get a server like that, you know, start very quickly thinking virtualization, you know, how to use Hyper-V to take advantage of that. And today, every Hyper-V supports 4 cores and up to 64 gigs of RAM per VM. So your SQL guys, you know, a 4-core, 64 gig of RAM SQL server is very, very, very capable box of doing that. Okay? So I'm done with the hardware stuff. You want a picture of that? And if you say, are we going to fix Task Manager to make more sense of those? If I hyper-thread this one, it's going to be 128 threads. Try to open the DL980 of HP that has 8 CPUs, 10 core, that's 80 core, and then hyper-thread 160 threads, then and 2 terabytes of RAM. So, good question. The storage, actually, it's a poor man's storage. So, I.O. is always your enemy, of course. And that's where you're battling. The reason I'm saying G7, since we're talking, just 1 minute for that. If you plan ever a Hyper-V or virtualization, make sure your server is the G7 or above series. The reason of that is we took a lot of the instructions from Windows. We worked with Intel, and we brought it down to the chip. So we've seen the I.O. maybe an overhead of 3 to 5% over bare metal. With G5, G6, though, you see 10, 20% overhead on I.O. So here my D-system is simply a RAID 1, local disks, nothing fancy. Yeah. And it shouldn't be. This is just my VM. I don't host my data on that disk set. If I had data, I would use something else.
I suppose the disk is the most expensive part.
It is. It is. Unfortunately. Okay, so let me show you what I have over here. So I'm going to my SQL 5, server 5, I'm sorry, and I'm starting fresh. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to establish a cluster. So I'm acting now as the Windows administrator that I have the right access on Active Directory environment to create a new cluster. So simply I'm going to my service manager and I say create a cluster. So I'm adding the first server, which is going to be called Always On SRV2. Let me make the Control-C, add. Good, it found it. And you've seen Contoso before. You see it again now. Hopefully we'll never lose that name. Interesting. Hold on. Okay. Please work. All right. Maybe some instance went to sleep. Always on. SRV5. Okay, so we have 3 servers in our cluster. So this is the validation I was telling you. It goes through all your nodes that you're putting together. It ensures all the updates are in place. Everything is working right, hopefully. And then when it's done, it's going to create this cluster for you. Again, these are three VMs running on the main server. And Windows R2 is putting them together. So I'm hoping this one is going to finish, because otherwise I'll be in trouble. And of course, I ran this test last night and everything was fine. But now it had to fail when I'm in front of you guys. Anyhow, I'll let it go for a while. I'm going to switch to the number 1. Let me go through some slides and I'll monitor it over here. make sure it's working. I don't want to waste time because we have a lot of slides to cover. So I'm going to go back to the demo when this one finishes. So what we expect to have it happen is we have three servers, let's say, and we identify one as the primary, the other as the other two as the secondary. There are two concepts to talk about. We have the availability group, which is a set of databases, and you have the virtual name. You're creating, as is called, a listener. A listener is the name you're going to use in your connection string. And the connection string supports the virtual name, plus is going to support another attribute that is called application intent. So in some of your connections, your intention is read-only. So if you say application intent equal read-only, the system is going to go and find the first server in your in your cluster that is marked as read-only. The trouble we have recently is as we're trying to sort out some of the finalized Denali, let's assume from your four servers you're losing the three and you were left only with primary server. Actually, I want to get some opinions from you. So if we leave only the primary, let's say all three die, explode, whatever. The primary, of course, is read-write server. What should we do for the other connections they're supposed to do only reads? Should we allow them to connect there? Yep. Anybody else? No? Who says no?
Depends.
We know that. It's kind of interesting because these connections were, you never intended them to go to this primary server. They were supposed to go to a secondary server and query from there. If they come to the primary server, you may have problems, performance problems with your primary. So automatically, the depend is, okay, it's more hands-on, you can control it. But automatically, let's say 3 a.m. this happens, should we let them connect or should we put them on hold? Right.
That's a situation.
Okay.
Or a situation where the application is performing poorly, okay, which is why everything's going against the primary. That's what happens even in clustering, right? Active active node, when the primary fails over on a secondary where multiple instances are running.
Right.
That's the same scenario.
Okay.
It's connected to the sign 9.
Right. So the read-only should connect?
If it's not that critical, we should be connecting it via different...
Okay. So how do I know if it's critical or not?
You should do that in design.
In design. Okay. So we're kind of going back to the depend potentially. So you're saying maybe the application receives some kind of message and saying, now you're connecting to a read-write, even if you were supposed to be read-only?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
There almost needs to be a division of read-only between two types of intent.
Okay.
Because there's the I can support running against the read-only database, so I don't care which one I connect.
Right.
And then there's I need to run against the non-primary because I'm going to hammer it.
Okay. And we do have that. We call it read-intent and read-only. Actually, there are three settings. No reading, reading, yes, and read-intent, which is your intention to read. Okay, that's some good feedback. All right. So, let's try again. Let's go back to the demo machine. Mileage may vary. I'll switch. Okay, so the cluster finished, it did all these checks. If it believes, hopefully everything is fine. We're going to give it a name, always on, cluster, for example. So it's creating all the elements, and the cluster has been created. Here's my cluster. When we go there, we should be able to see the nodes. Fear not of this red button. I got scared as well the first time. It's when the cluster is trying to start up at this stage. So the cluster is created. What you need to do then is not by default ready. You have to establish also a new setting in SQL Server. So we have a new tab in SQL Server. It's called Always On High Availability. You notice a system, I recognized immediately it belongs to a cluster you just generated. So the cluster must be created first. You must have a cluster to do that. And then I'm enabling the availability group. Hi. But my cluster is running. Not bad. Hold on. The gods of demo is not with me this morning. I apologize. So let me go through my slides, and then I'll be trying in the meantime to do that. If I had an assistant, he can help me here. Well, that's what I'll try to do. No, I'm not going to restart the server, but I'm going to try. I have snapshot on my VM, so I'll try to go to a known better state, hopefully. Okay, so when you have this scenario established, again, there is the availability group, and there is the virtual name, the listener. So when I have a failure in the system, the whole availability group and the virtual name moves to the secondary. At this stage, the server array is out of the cluster, so the system doesn't even connect to that at all. The listener becomes online. The listener is part of your AD. It's an object in the Active Directory, actually. So it's recognized by the application and is used to connect. So you may say, okay, I failed over. I have the new database over there. But in like today, when you restore a database to a new server, what is one of the main issues you may have? Logins. The logins are left behind, although there is a way to copy the logins across. What method you can use today? SSIS, very good. SSIS has a task to copy the logins from server A to server B. In Denali, we're introducing a new feature that is called contained databases. So a database can be identified as contained, and contained database includes all the logins, passwords, whatever. It's not in the master anymore, it's in the database. So when you restore the database, all the logins or the usernames are there. That's very convenient. It is, though, a feature you have to establish and enable on the server level. It's a property on the server level to allow the creation or the restore of contained databases. Because you can imagine there can be some security issues there if you encapsulate everything. There is another object as well that I think is helpful to have it included. It's not here. What other object you would like to include within the database? Huh? Jobs. SQL Aden jobs would be nice to be included as well. So we're looking into that. The tricky part is if the job is referring to some other elements, they're not available in the other server. So we're thinking of doing some, you know, be very restrictive there. If the job uses only that database and nothing else, it can probably go with this schema. Yes, yeah, that can do it as well. Yeah, we can package it from the application level as well. But this is more on the database level. So when the idea is when we have failovers, perhaps to a new server or stuff like that, you know, everything is included in the database. Yeah, application is more to package it and, you know, install it, pretty much. This one is part of the whole mirroring solution. Okay. All right. Let me see. Is Shashank here? Raj, can you help me for a second? This is Raja. I have a snapshot over here for each one of them. I don't know if we can revert back to the, you see I have an 816 picture. Is there a way to
all of them
revert? Yeah. So that will revert back? Okay, let's try that.
All four?
All four, yeah, please.
The DC? No.
No, they're not doing anything. See if that works. Okay. Yes, sir. Correct. Correct. So in a clustering, you don't worry for that because it's all you share disks and settings and everything like that, right? Well, clustering it's a Windows clustering. So Windows just manages the nodes, manages the connections, that's all. It doesn't know anything as far as the databases and the database objects. So the way it happens is Windows, when one node goes down, Windows brings the other node up, okay? And then SQL Server starts, and the availability groups become available, and if you had them, for example, full sync, then your data are intact at this stage. No, the logins, well, we don't synchronize the master, so the logins are on the master.
Oh, so this is a non-shared.
Correct, a non-shared scenario, standalone. And typically we see that as the most common scenario, expecting scenario anyhow, to be standalone, non-shared systems. Yeah? So the clustering doesn't change, still is available. It's just, yes, sir. So the question is the virtual name if it's on the server level. So you create it on the server level, but it's available on the DNS level. You know, your whole network knows about it. Yes, yes. So if in my scenario, I had four servers. When I create in one of them, in the primary, actually, you have to create in the primary. When I create it in the primary, the virtual name, it propagates to all the nodes of the cluster. When you fail over, the virtual name will become available to the new primary. So there is always one primary in your cluster. So when the primary fails, based on the rules you establish, the next primary comes up, and the virtual name points to that. So within the virtual name concept, there is always the concepts, which one is the primary, which one are the secondaries, which one are readables, what have you. So you may have three secondaries, and the second one is only the readable. The first secondary and the last secondary, probably they're just, you have them as standbys, as replicas. So there is the concept, which one is the first readable in this scenario. If you have no readable, you'll get an error on this system.
Can you control the brand here available?
Yes, and I'll show you that. You can establish a list, which one is first, which one is second, absolutely. I'll show it to you. Yep, at least I'll show you the code. yes, sir. I'll take two more questions. Raja, how are we doing there? Upright?
Do you have any details on the replication protocol between the primaries and secondaries at all?
Well, we're using primarily, is the mirroring. We're using full sync or async, so we're reading the log, we apply the log. It's a log application. Well, it's quite recoverable to a certain extent, like today, you know, mirroring. So the data that you're changing in the primary is held in the transaction log. If you lose connection with one of your secondaries, the data is accumulating there. But there is, like today in a replication, there is a certain timeout that if you go over that, We may consider the thing way out of sync. You have to redo that. Yeah, I think it's one day that we have today. Yeah. Okay, I see three hands. Yes, because you guys asked already.
Can you make distribution database
Okay. So the question is, and you're assuming I have a distribution database, which I didn't say we have one. So here, yes, in replication you have a distribution database, but in mirroring there's no distribution database. We're just reading directly the log.
Yeah, but if you have replication on mirroring.
If you have replication on mirroring.
Replication and mirroring at the same time.
You went back, you think?
Yeah, but you want me to look at the cluster and recreate them? Or?
Let me create them.
Okay.
Actually, you can. Why don't you do that? Just put server 2, server 3, server 4, 5. Okay. So we don't support. Okay, one question and then I have to move on. Go ahead. Well, the question is if we'll expose an API so some other third parties may use what we have. We do have enough already communication, you may say, with both EMCs and the other hardware vendors where they know that we're in states like that. You know, that's why you can freeze SQL, you can thaw SQL, you know, there are some different statements to support the hardware level of availability, but that's the only extent we're working with them. We kind of expect to be both of them to be kind of mutually exclusive. I mean, if you have an EMC replication, for example, that's enough. You don't have to go on top of that. So the only thing is we expose those thaw and freeze concepts so EMC, for example, or HP OpenWorks can grab it and move it in a consistent state, but that's all. Okay, let me move on. Hopefully we'll have some minutes at the end of the session to do that. It's not working. So open server 5. Maybe we need to restore the server 1 as well. Okay, so here's actually this is a good slide as well to show you how the ITER works operate. This is the three, so we are basing everything on Windows Server Failover Cluster. It's a service that must run on every server. And then when the cluster is generated on top of that, we can have the synchronization. The method we're using is database active log synchronization. So even if we say fully sync, it's not 100% sync, there is always a little lag because we fully sync the logs but not the databases. Then the log has to be replayed. On the primary, on the database for the secondary. So the availability group uses the Windows Server Failover Cluster to figure out the inter-node health detection, to coordinate the failover, when to happen, which node is the one to take over and become the primary. And then regarding we supporting, of course, Hyper-V, that's one of the main elements. Don't worry for my lab. We do support Hyper-V quite well over here, as well we're supporting file shares and NLB through the process. Yes, sir?
Do you support live migration?
We do. Absolutely. I have another slide for that. We support live migration, and talking for infrastructure, we support also Windows Core as well. So we tested extensively SQL to make sure that we don't have any dependencies anymore that is not available. So Windows Core is a very exciting feature we support. We figure out it cuts about 60% of your patches that you may have for Windows. It's kind of interesting when you're talking to DBAs, most of the maintenance they're telling us that it's happening is on Windows level, not on SQL level. You have to apply all the security patches and for media player and solitaire and all that. Don't laugh, especially Windows Media. That's scary stuff. I'm sorry? I'm not sure if we're supporting that yet. But we still have a few months. So.
What about SQL Azure? Can you participate in this?
Well, that would be fun. The question is, can SQL Azure participate in this cluster? The answer is no. I mean, it has to be a cluster. It has to be a node within one of your networks internal. Yeah. SQL Azure can be play here as a synchronization point. You can establish, we have in Azure a service, it's called Data Sync. That's a very exciting feature. So an Azure can replicate bidirectional to your database internally. Yeah. All right, so as far as efficiency, the biggest one we added is to allow you to utilize your additional hardware better. So having an option to use readable and do balancing your read-only workloads, it's a very exciting opportunity. Your multiple readables, again, they can be established with intent to be read or actually read, and it's a very fast change. You're not really committing too much. It's a database option property. You can easily change it from readable to not readable and back to readable. Okay, so it's not like you're committing 100% in a particular infrastructure. I think I have more details here. Yep. This shows you a little better how the process is expected to work. So we have an availability group over here. You'll hear that again and again. So AG, availability group. You may say, can I have one database in the availability group? Of course. Can I have one too many databases?
How many is many?
See, I knew you'd ask me that. Okay, so classic statement. We've tested up to 16 so far, and it seems to be okay. So miles vary. So you may say, well, if you try to put your whole server in one availability group, I think maybe that's what you try. I would personally do multiple availability groups, because per availability group, I can create a different topology potentially, different servers, different synchronous, asynchronous, what have you. And again, this is all metadata. It doesn't affect you too much. So this is, I have a secondary. And the point is, we're putting SQL Server EXE over here just to emphasize that SQL sits on top of the Windows clustering system. It's like that, totally isolated from each other. Okay. There is one-way replication, mirroring actually. And I have my reports connecting to my secondary. Failover. Boom, something happened, whatever. This is assuming it's synchronous, so it's automatic failover. So this becomes the primary now, this becomes the secondary. Actually, this assuming there is a even if there is a failure of the primary and this becomes the primary, when this comes up in your system, it will come in as a secondary. That's the beauty. When that joins the cluster again, it will assume automatically a secondary role, and it will start receiving the information of your system. This is configurable as well as it is today. If you allow this kind of automatic joining or you want it to be more manual from your side, which I prefer, you know, join the cluster and then join the cluster and then participate in the always-on topology. So in this scenario, the replication goes the other way. The readable mirror connects over here and is close to real time of information. So when this one comes up and it says I'm secondary readable, then again the application will connect to that right away. I don't have to change connection strings. I don't have to change anything. As far as the backup, backup is quite exciting as well, because in a very busy system, and you know that, backups can create some overhead in your application, especially if you do a compressed backup, which is very nice to do, compressed adding some more CPU load, not too much, but we're talking 5 to 6% perhaps CPU load. If you don't even have this 5, 6% available, then backing up from the secondary is a fantastic option, because there is no impact in the system. And because it's synchronous, the whole log chain is maintained between 100% between the primary and the secondary. So I can take a secondary backup, as I said, restore it on the primary, maybe apply the logs from the primary to that restore, and you're fully in sync there. As we do today in mirroring, we do it in the always on as well. I don't have it over here, but we support automatic page correction as well on the primary. If the primary we detect the page is corrupt, it's going to go to a synchronous replica to get this page automatically and fix itself. You have no control on that. It's going to do it, regardless if you like it or not. So this is what I was telling you for the read-only client connectivity. This is the new property we have in the connection string. So you put in your traditional connection string. If you don't put this application intent equal read-only, the default is read-write, as it is today. When you connect today to any database, you're always connecting in a full access mode. If you want to have it as readable only, you put read application intent equal read-only, and when it uses that virtual name, it's going to ignore the primary, and it's going to try to find the first node that is marked as read intent. If it doesn't find any, it's going to fail. It's going to give you an error saying there's no node that can be read. That's the behavior today. Is it working?
This is not working. I couldn't add at all. So I'm going to try on this.
You try yours?
Yeah, what's the
password? Oh, is the password 01 or something like
that? I try.
I have it somewhere. I don't know where I have it. So what's wrong with this one?
I couldn't even add the notes. There's a name resolution.
It's one of those, password 01 or something like that. Did you restore the fifth one as well?
Yes. Continue.
Okay. It's one of those passwords there. I don't have it with me right now. Which one are you connecting as a demo user?
Demo user has no admin password, no admin
permission. No, demo user. And it's one of those passwords.
Right.
Yeah.
If I connect here, huh?
Yep.
When I create a cluster, huh?
It should work.
It says that you can't be because I'm not a domain user.
Is your domain running?
Yeah, domain user. I can ping.
That's all the password I have.
Okay. No, it's working.
It's okay?
Yeah. You want to use this?
Yeah. Plug it in and I'll go there. All right. We may have something. It'll be a fast demo. Okay, we're on demo. Okay, let's be positive now. Lesson learned, have a backup. So you took mine, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And bring me up. He's changing, okay. And how do I go to number 5, is that right?
Yeah.
Can I use that, do you think?
Yep. I'm going to double. Going to this.
It's not working. Why is it red?
Oh, something that happens always.
Just want to go into number 5. It's number 5?
Yep.
This one?
That's it.
Ah, okay, good. Whoop, screens are falling and everything. It's not full screen. All right, so let's see what we have here. At least to show you the availability groups. So I'm going to connect to number two. We already created the cloud. Did you enable availability groups, Raja? Oh. So go.
It's a plain image.
So go to any of the, go to all of the servers.
Never mind.
I think we'll have time. And we're back to our demo. Okay. So one of the main items we found with cluster, you probably faced as well, sometimes cluster takes a while to fail over. Did you have that? So when we say a while, it can take up to a few minutes. Why is it taking that long?
Transactions.
Transactions, they have to roll back. If you have transactions that they haven't moved over, they're going to roll back. If you open the log, the error log of SQL, you'll see it keep logging, rolling back. That's why mirroring is used by many companies, because even today, mirroring failover is very fast, in the seconds to do that. So we work to make sure as well the mirroring here gives us even faster and more predictable recovery time. So we have worked dearly on that. We're supporting multi-site clustering across subnets. This is exciting because we always had a very complex system to establish geoclustering today. Has anybody worked with geoclusters? Yeah? How was the experience?
Not with SQL itself,
but with EMC?
Yeah, with EMC, we use it
for cluster management. Okay. Okay, very good. Okay. So the problem we had up to today is we required subnets. We required all the nodes to be on the same subnet, and that was very restrictive. So we don't support that. We don't require that anymore. That's a great feature to go by. We're supporting, as we said, more flexible failover policy. The biggest problem with cluster is to avoid false failovers. That's catastrophic. Especially you're in a big batch or something like that, they start failing over, has to roll back everything. You know, it's a really bad story. So we're becoming a little more clever. We're adding better diagnostics, and we have more configurable ways to control the conditions. You may want to enhance, it allows you to enhance some timeouts, maybe remove some events that you see them as maybe as false events. The point is we give you about 3 pages of setup to enable or disable the right level of conditions to support that. We support MTB on the local drive. That was another thing also that the cluster required to be on the shared disk. Now every MTB can be on its own disk and work on that. I said also at the beginning that DAS versus SAN is another concern. We're not really partial. I mean, we support both scenarios, as you saw. SAN supported, local storage is supported as well. And I kind of prefer to use the, local storage can be a SAN as well, but it's part of the particular subnet that you use it. So, but you don't require to share that environment. All right, so this is a more flexible policy, as we're saying. In 2008 R2, pretty much there was the resource DLL, and then based, it was communicating directly with the SQL Server tier. There was no environment to have a buffer to create more options and give it you more flexibility and more granularity. So in Denali, we have all this object that is called SP Server Diagnostics, that it goes through another level to determine when it should fail over and how it should fail over. It just gives us an environment to do that. What we're planning post-Denali is to allow you to extend this one and add your own set of events or diagnostics to be more company-specific. So this is more what we, I said already, what we're planning to support. We're going to support the Windows Server Core. So if you have big tier one systems, I would say Server Core is very exciting to look into it already and start planning for that. We're supporting rolling upgrades and patching of SQL. And we're supporting that for both versions of always on, if you have availability group or you have the traditional failover cluster instance. Okay? So this is very exciting because you can keep your system you know, pretty much always on and start, you know, with a rolling process to implement patches and service bugs and cumulative updates. We're supporting some new online operations. When you're talking for tier one system, except of the always on, is also to stay online. SQL Server 2008 still has a number of operations. They are not really 100% online. One of them being indexing. When you index and you commit, the commit time requires, we have online indexing, but when we commit, we require a lock on the system. So those two operations, we expect them to be really online, especially adding a column with default. So adding a column today requires a table lock, a schema lock, which can create some additional blocking when the system is very busy. When we're putting default, we're doing that truly online because it already has a value, so I don't have to worry to check anything for nulls to establish all this spacing. So it's a kind of a recommended way to extend your DDL without having any blocking issues, so establish a default in the process. We have something. I don't think anybody believes us anymore. Okay. Let me show you at least the thing, and I have, what, 6 minutes. Wow, I'm having pink. Did you bend something here? I guess the backup is not working. Is it at all visible? Probably not. Well, at least to show you what I have, that's all. That's what I can do. What you're getting is, and the resolution is rather small, we're getting a new availability group option over here. And then beyond that, you can establish availability groups. If I have here the properties, that's where you specify in the properties which one are fully sync, which one are sync, and all these levels. So you see at the bottom of the properties over here, I have some of them, they are synchronized, and some of them can be readable in 10 or not. If I want to make some changes, this is the availability group listener. This is where you specify a particular name, and the name has a particular port and a particular IP address of the system. When you establish this one, have you? And let's say I connect to another of my nodes over here, let's say number 3. Under the databases, you see I have two databases that they called synchronized. Why is it called synchronized versus synchronizing? When you say synchronized, it implies what? Huh? It's up to date, yes, but something else as well. It's fully sync. So still fully sync can go to a synchronizing level, but 99.9% is synchronized. The asynchronous will go to a synchronizing mode. If you establish an environment like that and you want to break it, you want to redone it, you want to do whatever you like, you have first to delete the availability group, which is AdWorks in my time, in a way to release all those databases on this level. And when you delete that, then you can do then the databases can be converted to readable or read-write with no problems. Or you can back them up or what have you. So when you make a database, one of the replicas readable, as we saw before, then you can also back up from that. You have first to make it readable, then you can back up out of this database. Anything else I can show you? And you may believe me. And all this stuff, as I said, is supported through PowerShell as well. But this is the main properties window that you're working on. That's where you would establish the particular failover mode, if it's automatic, if it's manual, and all these processes. So I apologize for the demo gods, but that's what I could show you in this pink screen so far. This is what is available today in CTP3. I highly encourage you again that please download it, set it up. It's very easy to set it up. You just install it, but it doesn't work across instances. Like you can do with mirroring today. You can establish mirror between two instances and then play with that. Always on requires separate machines. Each of those four nodes we have, they have to be either physical server or VMs to establish, because you have to establish the cluster first. So you so the always on is not across instances, is across nodes of a cluster. Okay, so that may make your setup a little more challenging. Let me see if I have any features we haven't discussed. PowerShell, synchronous, asynchronous, all these things. So I think we kind of covered most of these issues. I think you're going to get the slides. This is the site where you can go and get the information. It's in CTP. We have very active MSDN forums and blog sites, so please visit those. Conclusion, it's good stuff. Seriously, this is one of our main features of Denali. We heard the DBAs, we heard the corporations. This is to establish this unified way, easy way to establish the combination of cluster, highly available, disaster recovery, readable, offline backup, page detection, torn connection, rolling rollbacks, Windows Core in one feature. One nice wizard does all this stuff for you. So it's a very powerful feature. Please focus on that. Learn a lot more in this session. I think we have some hands-on labs, I believe, on Always On. So take some time to play with that. Q&A, we had already that. If you have any questions more, let me know. Otherwise, I appreciate you coming. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the TechEd.